Good morning. You are listening to After Deadline. I'm Nancy McCarthy. I'm the South County reporter for the Daily Astorian and editor of the Seaside Signal and the Cannon Beach Gazette. With me today are three people. We're going to talk about the upcoming $128.8 million Seaside School District bond measure that is coming up in the November 5th ballot. For several years, the Seaside School District has been trying to find ways, land and funding for removing students from the five schools at one time, now four, in the school district to get them out of the tsunami zone and away from the earthquake damage that might occur to the schools when an earthquake does occur. We are in that window of opportunity, I think you could say, for a Cascadia subduction earthquake, which could reach a magnitude of 9 or greater. Let's remember the Japanese earthquake of March 11, 2011. And we could also see a tsunami surge that could reach, they say, at least, you know, maybe 80 feet or higher. So we're looking at a potential destruction of the schools. To prevent that, Superintendent Doug Daugherty has been scrambling to find land that will be high enough to help keep the students away from the tsunami danger. And he's been also trying to find ways for funding the construction of a new campus that would house about 1,700 students. Today we are going to talk to Mary Blake, who is the co-chair of the campaign, the bond measure campaign. We're going to talk to Tom Horning, who is a local geologist and very familiar with the land in and around Seaside. He is a tsunami and earthquake specialist. And we are going to talk to Keith Johnson, who is an architect and project manager. He works for Dull Olson Weeks IBI Group out of Portland. And we are going to talk about the reason where the school district is proposing the bond measure and what will happen if the voters do approve that on November 5th. So welcome.
Oh, gosh, boy.
Good to be here.
Thank you very much. Did you get it just right there, Nancy? Thanks
I've been writing
so
about it a little bit.
and that's part of the big story is that this has been something that has been reported upon, at least when I've been here for 30 years. The tsunami issue started coming up 20 years ago, and I watched Doug Daugherty start taking it and methodically pulling all the information and what the impact would be, not only to our community, but more importantly to the future of our community, our kids. So, this has been something that has been out there, but now is taking so seriously, and that we have had the events. And not only the events of the tsunami, but all of us can remember the events of 2006, which was a 51-hour knockout of power. And then the very next year, 2007, it was 125 hours. And that was the reason why I understood how important the community side of the school is because we use the community center as the evacuation site for our people who were vulnerable. And that's where it was, we housed people. They stayed there overnight. We fed them. Over 6,000 meals were served. We generated it up. And people came together around that. But that is the exciting part, that we have the opportunity right in front of us to be able to build a brand new school, not only for the 21st century, to give our kids that lead-in from K through 12, that we can make a difference in their lives so they can make a difference in the world, but then also the community side of it for community events, continued learning, and then also the emergency side of it. So, yeah, you nailed it. So this is more than just building a school.
Well, Tom, tell us a little bit about why there's a need for the school. What is it about our natural environment here in Seaside that we need a school, a new brand new campus?
Well, the landscape of Seaside, Gearhart, and Cannon Beach is unusually low compared to the rest of the Oregon coast, and it's low enough for tsunamis to flood over and inundate every time we have a large earthquake. We've studied these places thoroughly, and we can find evidence of rivers changing course, dead-end surge channels, scoured landscapes, gravels washed from the ocean inland into the peat bogs, sands being carried up river valleys and dumped out. It all indicates that water easily floods over the top of Seaside, well up into the middle of Gearhart and over much of Cannon Beach. And where all the schools are located is right at the worst points. So they're all going to be destroyed within 20 minutes of the earthquake, because that's how long it takes a tsunami to come in. So the window is open. These earthquakes and tsunamis can be generated as frequently as every 200 years or as long as 1,000 years apart. They appear to be in clusters. We're in a cluster now. And the average within a cluster is about 330 to 350 years, and it's been 313 years since the last one. So you can say that if it doesn't happen on the average, it could happen tomorrow or it could happen 150 years from now. But given that total destruction of the community is expected, because all the wood structures that we have for our homes will just wash away, and that includes the schools, we can't afford to gamble with our children's lives.
Well, now tell me about the background in terms of how did a new design for the school, or how did the idea for the school come about, the campus for the school?
Yeah, I was invited to sort of get involved with that preliminary piece. So we started looking for land that could handle all the schools outside of the inundation zone. And there is no piece of land until you get up into the forestry areas. So we started looking at a Weyerhaeuser land, and there is a parcel of land there of 50 acres that is just off of the parking lot of Seaside High. So it's still within
Seaside Heights.
Seaside Heights. Thank you. See, that's why you're a good reporter. Yeah, so right there, we can, you know, use that to hit that 80-foot mark and also have a large enough footprint to handle a combined campus. So then it got really exciting when you started thinking about a combined campus of efficiencies, and also what we know of the design and LEED certified buildings and investing in energy efficiency. So then it got really exciting. So efficiency of school personnel, efficiency of buildings, kids being able to have seamless experiences in their learning from kindergarten all the way to their senior high school period, except for having, you know, separate spaces. So when they're playing, they aren't playing out on the same field, but they can have separated learning centers as well as playgrounds. But the efficiencies are going to be something really wonderful. So that's how we were blessed with getting some pretty capable folks from the architectural firm that Keith is on.
First of all, I want to check. The land itself has not been purchased yet.
No.
Is that right?
No. And I think that's, again, that assurance to the public process is that we haven't gotten so far out that it's, you know, we're just thinking that everybody, of course, will vote yes, and that we're, you know, we bought the land. You know, the school district isn't in a position to be holding a lot of land if they aren't going to build the school. So this has been, because it's forested lands, it had to be and has to be rezoned. Because it's forested lands, there's a question on the price. So a lot of work has gone into a lot of different agencies. There's some delicate, sensitive areas for environmental concerns, fish and wildlife. So there are a lot of layers to this very complex issue that seems pretty simple and straightforward. But this has been a process that has been going on for quite some time. So no, the land has not been purchased. It's part of the bond measure.
So the $128.8 million is part of that will go toward the purchase of the
land.
And
also an assurance to folks, it's not only the land and the construction, but it also is including a lot of the materials in there, desks, chairs. So it's not like we would, you know, do something, build a building, and all of a sudden say, oops, well, what are they going to be sitting in, and, mm-hmm. and come back and either do a fundraiser or ask the folks for additional money. So we've been very thoughtful on what this bond measure will include and how it will be used. Yes.
I do want to mention, too, that the tax rate is $2 and is estimated to be $2.16 per $1,000 assessed valuation for a property that's assessed, not necessarily market value, but is assessed at $200,000. That would be $432 a year. The original estimate was $1.82 per thousand. How did it get up to $2.16 per thousand?
That's a moving interest rate. So it's, again, another based on the economy. Because the economy is getting better, interest rates are going up. So when the economy was still struggling, they dropped the interest rates to try to get capital projects, to try to get construction projects going. So within the time that we got into this about not quite a year ago, it has risen. So that's why this particular piece is at the right time, at the right price. And I also got some comparisons because this is a capital construction bond, and no other school district of our similar size can come close to raising as much money for such a low cost. Of the recent 20 to 31 year bonds across the state, I'll use Astoria for an example. Their bond levy cost $2.04 per thousand, but they only raised $21 million.
So why is it so much better in Seaside?
Thank you for asking that question, Nancy. It's because it's based on the total valuation of our community, and that's very unique because of where we are, location, location, location. And probably one of the most interesting and most important pieces is that two-thirds of that valuation is held by second homeowners who don't vote here. But they expect us to do the right things for our community, for not only the 21st Century Learning Center and education for our kids, but also for continued learning and also for the safety aspect of it. So when they're here enjoying our community and all the resources that we have, if we have a weather event or when the tsunami hits, they too can feel comfortable enough that they can go to the emergency area of the school because it will not be interrupted. A portion of the 300,000 square feet will be reinforced and engineered to handle that kind of earthquake, and then the rest of the building will also be, after we get through the initial impact, will be able to be used. So we can handle thousands of people in that center for a very long time.
Well, Keith, I wanted to ask you, bring you into this a little bit. You are in the process of creating a design for the new campus, and actually even have some preliminary drawings that right. people might be able to look at on the school district website.
That's
Is
correct.
That right?
And district offices, and I'm sure in numerous places around town.
We will place them in schools because people can come and walk around the schools to look at the conditions of our schools. That's the other piece. Four of the five buildings are over 60 years old and have been reviewed and estimated that they could not tolerate any kind of an earthquake. They will collapse. Yeah.
And so how did you come up with the initial design? What happened in the district to let you know what kinds of facilities were desired in the district?
Okay. Those are great questions. Our contract with the district for this pre-bond work, that's the term we use, is to do some planning level work. As I think everybody in this room has been to one or more of our community town hall meetings. The purpose of those is just to find out, is to answer that question. What do you want in a school, and what do you need program-wise that would, in your community's view, be of the most benefit for your students? So we start asking those fairly basic questions, and you might remember we had everybody write their ideas on note cards. We put those up on the walls and and let people report back and then actually vote on those ideas. And we've taken those and identified at a big picture level what needs to go into this building in terms of program. So, and then concurrent with that, we've been meeting with a bond steering group that Doug Dougherty has been chairing to sort of drill down a little further into what does this mean in terms of square footage. And that's Mary has mentioned a figure of roughly 300,000 square feet. That's where that number came from. It's the result of us listening to your community, working with the principals at the various schools and Doug's office to come up with a program, which is just a list of all the rooms in the new building, and we've assigned square footages to those. My firm does primarily K-12 public school work, and we do probably 95% of our practice is based on going through this very process, identifying needs, and then putting some initial dollars to those. So that's how we came up with the size of the building. We've done some site studies, working with the bond steering group and then the key communicators to sort of firm those studies up at a planning level. We've looked at several places on this proposed site. We don't have a lot of site information yet because, as Mary mentioned, the district doesn't own the property, mm-hmm. so we can't actually get on it and do some really detailed studies. But Google Maps are great for this sort of work. You can get a fairly accurate picture of a site, and we've been using those. The renderings that I've brought up today were actually done from Google Maps, and then using a 3D modeling program in the office, we've put a vision for this building, and that's all it is at this point. But it does include the 300,000 square feet, so your stakeholders can get an idea of the relative size of this building and how it might fit on the site. It's a very interesting site in that it has a lot of slope to it, probably in the realm of 30 to 50 feet down the, running east to west, and we've oriented the building along with that to take advantage of the slope. So instead of a gigantic barn sitting up there, there will be distinct pieces of this building that stair-step down the site, and you can see that on the drawings when you get around to looking at those. So okay. that's how we started.
Great. Yeah. You are listening to Coast Community Radio. This is the After Deadline program. I'm Nancy McCarthy, a South County reporter for the Daily Astorian and editor of the Seaside Signal and the Cannon Beach Gazette. With me today is Keith Johnson, who we were just listening to, who is the project manager. He's an architect. He's helping to design the new proposed campus for Seaside School District. We're also talking to Tom Horning, who is a local geologist, has extensive knowledge in tsunami and earthquake occurrences. And we are talking to Mary Blake, who is the co-campaigner, along with Doug Barker, for the bond measure, the $128.8 million bond measure that's going to be voted on November 5th. Keith, I wanted to ask you, this is a 50-acre site on the hillside east of Seaside Heights right. Elementary School. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you describe it, it's more, you call it a building, but it actually looks like to me from just looking at the renderings, three buildings plus a performance center and a gym and a cafeteria all kind of connected together. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes. We actually looked at several studies of pulling the three school components. If you think of the elementary school, the middle school, and the high school as three separate elements. We did some very early studies separating the buildings, and we know that you all get a little rain over here in the wintertime, mm-hmm. and we started thinking about, as Mary mentioned, the efficiencies of having one kitchen, one main kitchen in this building versus five kitchens that you currently operate, or four perhaps now. Some other things such as a boiler room and mechanical spaces, if those buildings were connected, we can take better advantage of those efficiencies. So on the one hand, we wanted to explore a structure that is one building. It'll be somewhat separated so that if, for example, we had a community event in the elementary school, back to school night, say, we could open up part of that building and not have people in the entire structure, but just in the elementary space. The other thing it does is it gives some identity to those schools so that the kids can point to their part of the building and say, hey, that's where I go to school, you know, and have some recognition there. Stepping the building down the hill will save some dollars in terms of the amount of grading work we have to do. Probably the ideal high school site is just a pancake flat site out in eastern Oregon someplace where you don't do any grading work and you plunk a building down on it and you're done. On a sloping site, you need to finesse that a little bit, and the result is to step the structure again so you don't have to imagine grading off a 50-foot fall across a long site. So that's kind of where we've come from thus far on the building. There's a lot more design work to do on it, of course, but in terms of planning it, that's how we got to where we are today on these renderings. And I think the two of the renderings are more of a bird's eye perspective that give you a view if you're up above the high school end of the building looking towards the east, and then from the elementary school side looking to the west, you can get a feeling for what that building would be like.
And if you don't get a feeling from looking at the pictures, one of the other things that we were able to do is Keith's firm designed and oversaw the building of Sandy High School, which is about the same square feet and about the same kind of amount to build that. So we went and kicked the tires of a 21st century learning center, and it was awesome. And kind of watching the kids move through there and how they learn and how the teachers really are teaching and the community pride that was in that. And that was one of the things that we heard over and over and over again is how important a school is for the pride of the community to really rally around. But if you aren't aware of what's happening, you know, one of the reasons why I was happy to retire is, I don't have a techno mind, and so technology just kind of is flying by me. But these kids are that's their orientation, that's their world, and they get excited about it. They're creative. The new learning centers have a lot of light and connection with nature, which is also one of the most remarkable things about this site, is because it really will be tucked successfully into the environment, which is the learning experience that will really count, is that adaptability of nature and what we learn. Really, we go out into nature, and those are the kinds of things that really drive home the knowledge that we get from our books and from our folks. So every aspect about this is really pretty exciting.
That's why Marie is the co-chair.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
excited. Tom, I want to ask you, how stable is that hillside?
Looks pretty good. I was involved in the geotechnical assessment of it, the preliminary work, and it doesn't have any signs of landsliding. It's got mudstone bedrock, which can participate in slides, but the slopes are gentle enough that they don't appear to have ever been involved in that. So aside from scraping off some clay soil and getting down into the more firmer material, there's very little that needs to be done there to improve it.
And they talk about when the earthquake occurs in the subduction zone earthquake, which is just offshore, what, about 50, 75 miles offshore, maybe even farther away now.
I like to say it's actually 15 miles under your feet. That's where the fault is.
That's wonderful. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay, moving along. They do talk about subsidence, though. They say that the land will go down. Will that hillside also go down?
It's basically the entire landscape all drops a few feet.
Okay.
It's just, it's elastic energy that's given up during the earthquake that lets just the general elevation of the land drop. The ocean stays at its existing elevation, so after the earthquake is over, what used to be maybe the intertidal zone is now totally underwater, and what used to be a forest might turn into a mud flat.
Well, so, what about that hillside? Would that drop also?
Yeah, the elevation of the land, instead of being at 90 feet, might be at 85 feet. But it's not that the land moves in any way. It's all just sort of lets out its air and drops a little bit,
so
uniformly and not differentially.
So how would that affect the buildings?
Well, the typical way to build a building, your house is probably this way, is they pour a concrete floor slab and maybe have a perimeter foundation that bears directly on the ground, on grade, and then support the building, maybe with column pads on the interior of the building if needed. The structure of this building is going to be a little different in that it will appear to sit on grade, but the foundation is actually going to be designed with some cross spans that will support the building independently of the ground. So in other words, the ground can move and the building will be carried by a reinforced slab system in addition to typical columns and beams. So that takes care of the sort of the gravity side of things that Tom was mentioning. There's also some horizontal movement that occurs in an earthquake. If you've ever gone to OMSI in Portland and gone in that little house they have that shakes around, you can get a feeling for what the lateral movement is like. There will be some expansion joints at various places in the building to accommodate that. And the preliminary reports have indicated that we need to accommodate about 6 inches of movement. So you see these in airports quite mm-hmm. often. You see the big plate going across the floor, particularly in long concourses. And that's what those do. They allow the building to move laterally somewhat. So that's all work to be done, but that's in terms of concept, that's what we'll be providing on this structure.
So how safe will the students be if they're in the school when the earthquake occurs?
The International Building Code, which is what we designed to, the Oregon State Specialty Code, Structural Specialty Code, mandates a certain rigidity of that building framework regardless. So in terms of the, comparing to buildings that are older, the old school buildings, for example, not designed to that level of the code. So even down to the level of the ceiling, typical lay-in ceiling is braced and cross-braced so the tiles can't pop out. I mean, it's at that level. So the students will be safe inside the building. We'll be able to exit the building right after that event.
All right. We've only got about 3 minutes left, and we've got so much to talk about. So stay tuned. We're probably going to be talking about this in October as well. But I wanted to ask you, when do the ballots go out?
The ballots will go out on October 18th, and they are due back to the Elections Department on November 5th.
All right. And about voters' registration, can they still register to vote?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. And there's only one question on your ballot 4-168, and it will ask, will you vote for this? And myself as a good citizen, and my mother, who's 95 and a new retiree, I plan to vote yes, and so does my mother. That's right.
That's good, since you're campaigning for
that's
it.
That's right.
Yeah. Why should people vote for this, and very quickly?
It's the right thing to do. It's being a good citizen. It's paying it forward. Our kids are in unsafe circumstances. The safety will extend out to the rest of the community. It's a great investment. It's an investment in the future. I think that's what we all need to do.
All right.
And it's cheaper now because interest rates are lower and they're going to be higher. So buy now, save later.
It's a lot of money. You're going to, I imagine, be encountering a lot of people saying, I can't afford that on a $200,000 assessed valuation.
I think I would have to challenge that. I think most people can afford it. They just have to modify things a bit. But most importantly, this is an event that's going to totally change and transform the coast. The Tsunami Advisory Group of Seaside put out a tsunami strategic investment plan, which calls for planning for the earthquake and tsunami to hit in 15 years from now. And I think everybody should stand up and be counted and get this thing rolling. It would be a terrible thing to have waited too long.
And what kind of value do you put on a life? And this will save lives.
And with that thought, I think we are at the end of our discussion today. We will have another discussion about this on October 18th, so stay tuned and be looking for your ballots for the November 5th election. Thank you very much for coming today. I appreciate it. We talked to Keith Johnson, the architect. We talked to Tom Horning, geologist, and Mary Blake, the co-chair of the campaign for the $128.8 million bond measure from Seaside School District. This is Nancy McCarthy. You have been listening to After Deadline on Coast Community Radio.